Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, good morning to you. We're going to waste no time this morning on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I really wanted to get Paul Hamilton on, and he's a little bit pressed for time for his own schedule today, and I said, it doesn't matter. I need Paul. I need my fix of Paul Hamilton today, so we're going to go right to the Wester Hotline here this morning in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Thanks for being with me. Paul Hamilton joins me right now to talk about some of this Sabre smoke that's been going on. Good morning to you, Paul. Thanks a lot for doing this a little bit earlier than normal.
Oh, no problem. How you been?
Pretty good. All right, so hope you had a good vacation, by the way. I know you were away last week. We missed talking to you, but glad you could do this today. All right. Let's start with Alex Tuch, and then I'll get to Paterka and some other items. The guys this morning were talking about a podcast apparently in Vancouver where they were indicating that maybe, you know, is this a guy that the Canucks could go trade for because he seems like he might want to have a restart or fresh start somewhere else. You go back to the comments on Locker Cleanout Day where you can kind of fill us in a little bit more. Where do you think things stand with the Sabres from their standpoint, and Alex Tuch from his standpoint, a guy who is eligible to sign a contract extension July 1st, has 1 year remaining on his deal?
Well, he was pretty non-committal, you know, on locker cleanout day. You know, he's sitting there, well, I haven't had a chance to sit down and talk to my wife about it and everything, and I'm thinking, really? I mean, the season's been over for a couple of days. This is going to be the contract of your life, and no talk at all about it? You haven't chatted about it? I mean, okay. So it wasn't like, no, I don't want to, or yes, I will. Or now the Sabres, Kevin Adams said it's a top priority for the Sabres. Once July 1st rolls around, when negotiations can start, he said it's a top priority for the Buffalo Sabres to, you know, get him re-signed and back here. Now the question is, does he want to be re-signed? How does he feel about it? As I said, he was very non-committal, which maybe tells us a lot right there. I mean, he loves the Buffalo Sabres. I mean, he grew up a Buffalo Sabres fan growing up just outside of Syracuse, came to a lot of games. I mean, when he was traded to Buffalo, he couldn't have been happier that he was going to be a Buffalo Sabre. Well, I didn't sense a guy who couldn't be happier when he was talking on Locker Cleanout Day. And so you wonder, you know, what is he thinking here? Does he want to get out? Does bring in a guy like Kukalainen? Here's a guy who's been a general manager in the NHL for over 10 years. I mean, does Alex Tuch look at that and say, okay, I like that. You know, I like that, you know, that he's going to be in the organization helping to make decisions. A guy who, you know, throughout his career as a general manager has been very aggressive in what he's done. So he might like that option. He might say, well, you know what? I still have 1 year left on my contract. Let's play it out and see what happens. You know, maybe he's willing to give it one more year to see, you know, are the Sabres really improving? Are they on the right track? Or is this hopeless type of a thing? It'll be interesting to see, you know, if he's willing to negotiate, willing to go, you know, all right, what are you offering? You know, what can we get in a long-term contract? Or is he wait and see more? Or has he had enough? And I mean, it seems like maybe, possibly, we're getting there, and we seem to be get there. Every 3 to 5 years, we seem to get there since this drought started, that the players, they get young players. Some of them are very good. In this case, they rushed a lot of their young players. And then all of a sudden, it's like, you know what? This losing is just horrible. We want out of here. Are we back into that mode of the of the 14-year rebuild again? Where, you know, Paterka. Now, you know, Paterka, what's his problem? Is it a Lindy Ruff problem, which I think it possibly could be? You know, Bo Byram, I think, is a little bit different. He's in a situation where he wants to be a top defenseman on a team. He knows with the Buffalo Sabres, with Rasmus Dahlin and Owen Power here, that's not going to happen. He's not going to get power play time. But still, those are three guys that maybe, possibly, want out of here. All right, let's say that happens. Well, I know what Rasmus Dahlin, and I believe Rasmus Dahlin, when he said that he doesn't want, you know, he wants to be part of the solution here. He hasn't asked to be moved. He doesn't want to be moved. He wants to be part of this. Well, if three top guys like that get moved, what do Tage Thompson and Rasmus Dahlin say? You know, where are they at, though, now? Are they like, all right, you know what, this isn't going to work out if we lost those three guys. So it's, you know, are we at that crossroads again, where we've been many times before, or where this team has been many times before? I mean, they've remade this team how many times in 14 years? They've had numerous GMs, numerous coaches, and it just none of it seems to work.
Is this maybe part of the reason why a guy like Eric Staal would be brought in to kind of be a liaison, talk to players who, you know, he's been through a lot in his NHL career. He could kind of be a guy, a bit of a go-between to kind of, you know, talk to them. I don't know. I'm just envisioning how these conversations go. You have Jarmo who comes in, obviously, to help out Kevyn Adams. But also, is this the type of role that Eric Staal could be somebody who could really kind of relate and help out here?
Absolutely, I think it is. You know, when Kevyn Adams was talking at locker cleanout day, he talked about, you know, he's got work to do to, you know, convince these players that they're on the right track and they're going to be successful here in Buffalo. Well, you know, J.J. Paterka would be number one in line that he has to convince. It seems like with what Elliot Friedman said so far, after 2 months of an off season, J.J. Paterka doesn't seem convinced. You know, whatever he may have heard. Is Alex Tuch convinced? You know, I don't know. He hasn't said. All he said is he hadn't talked to his wife about, you know, the biggest contract of his life. So, you know, he has to convince these players that now bringing in a guy like Staal or Jarmo, you know, you bring in those guys, does that maybe show some of the players, all right, we are changing some of the philosophies we have here. You know, we're headed in the right direction now. You know, we like these types of moves. That's not just one guy who never had the job before. He was hired by the Sabres making the decisions. And, you know, does that help in a player's mind? You know, I'll go back to, and I said this back then, you know, when the players and fans were at odds with each other, where, you know, the players were extremely upset that all they do is get booed every night in here. And I'm not saying whether it was right or wrong or anything. You know, fans can do what they want, and I'm not criticizing it at all. I'm just bringing it up because I know it bothered the players a lot. And I remember Jeremy White used the term, the Sabres, the players basically declared war on their fans. And, you know, I said it then, and I still wonder, do the players get over that, you know, with the fans, when they really get upset with the fans like that and don't even feel like it's their home rink anymore? Can they get over that? And I don't have an answer for you. I don't know. I don't know if that plays into any of this when a player is wondering if maybe this isn't the place for them to be anymore.
Well, winning fixes a lot of this. We know that. In a guy like J.J. Paterka's case, we've all heard the same things, which is J.J., he's not happy in Buffalo. He wants to be in a bigger city. He's a big city kind of guy. Well, guess what? You're not happy when you're losing as well. You start winning, that changes a lot of things, right? And in his case, Paul, which is different than Alex Tuch, he kind of has no leverage here, really, to me. You tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, the Sabres can say, like, look, this is we're qualifying you, and really that's where it goes. And then, sure, you have a process after that to sign him, but it's not like he can just walk. In Alex Tuch's case, he can say, look, I'm not re-signing with you. And then the Sabres are put in a position where they can keep him, see where things go, trade deadline, or they can just say, okay, that's fine. We're going to, you know, ship you off. He's in a different spot, J.J. Paterka.
Well, Kevin Adams has been very clear about this since he got the job, that he doesn't want players on this team that don't want to be in Buffalo. And he's said that from day one, and he's never shied away from that. He's always, you know, stayed with that. And so if a player just doesn't want to be around, J.J. Paterka being in a big city, I'm not buying it. If you really, really press me, my guess is it's Lindy Ruff, that he just does not like playing for Lindy Ruff. I had heard as the season went on, especially near the end, that some players weren't real enthralled with Lindy Ruff. And, you know, you might say, well, why? Well, part of it is, you know, Lindy Ruff is not afraid to stand there at the podium and criticize a player. Players don't like that when their coach, you know, throws them under the bus in front of media and that type of thing. And, you know, J.J. Paterka, just look at his analytic numbers. They are not good at all. And that doesn't help him when people start talking about offer sheets and everything. You know, all that kind of goes into there. There are people who feel the same, even though he scored 55 goals in the last 2 years, that because of how bad he is analytically, that the Sabres would be a better team without him on their team. You know, because, you know, analytically he doesn't. And if you watched him play last year, I thought he did improve his defensive play. I still think he has a long ways to go, and the numbers would prove that. But I thought, you know, watching him, I thought he worked a little bit harder to get back into the zone and try to pay attention to it. And, you know, maybe that's the rub. I mean, maybe he, you know, Lindy Ruff sometimes doesn't coddle people when he's trying to get his point across. And if, you know, J.J. Paterka, in his mind, wasn't holding up his end of the bargain defensively, it might have got pretty squirrely in that room between the two of them. And, you know, J.J. Paterka addressed this, that he needs to watch his body language and be better.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the joy when he was a younger player in here, when he would score a goal?
Yeah.
He was like a kid. It seemed like last year, anytime he scored a goal, that joy wasn't there. He wasn't smiling. He wasn't, you know, celebrating the goal. You know, he would celebrate with his teammates as they got into that pack, but there wasn't a smile on his face or anything. And even, you know, when you talk to him in the locker room, you're always willing to talk, but he always had a frown on his face. It was never kidding around at all or anything like that. It was like, all right, you want to do an interview? Let's do an interview. When it's over, you know, it was just, there was always a pout on his face, and he just didn't seem like a happy camper. So, you know, that's, if you made me guess, that would be my guess, that his problem basically is with Lindy Ruff, and that would be something that would have to be straightened out.
Paul Hamilton here on the Wester Hotline. His reports on WGR brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Thinking about today and planning for tomorrow, and by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. All right, well, you got Paterka, you got Tuch, and of course, Bo Byram, who, as I agree with you, you just said a little while ago, completely different type of scenario. This is maybe a player who doesn't necessarily hate being in Buffalo, but his circumstance, he might want a little bit more. What do you think they could get on the market for a guy like Bo Byram?
And you never, Bo Byram is the exact opposite. You never saw him moping around in the room. He was kidding around with guys. He was, you know, you talk to him, he seemed fine with being here in Buffalo. He seemed to like Buffalo. Never had a bad thing to say about the city or the teammates or anything like that. I just think simply he looks at it that, you know, he wants to be a guy on a power play. Well, here in Buffalo, he's not going to be on the power play unless there's an injury. That's going to be for many years to come. That's going to be Darlene's job and Power's job. You know, he wants to be the number one guy that goes out there in a big situation. That's going to be Rasmus Dahlin's job. Now, I don't know if Bo Byram would be okay with this, because, again, he wouldn't be on the power play. But if you look at Bo Byram, he played extremely well when he was out there with Erasmus Dahlin. That was a fantastic pair. And then he didn't play as well at all with any of the other defensemen. I have no problem of signing Bo Byram and saying he's Rasmus Dahlin's partner. My thought is, why can't you do that? Now, maybe Bo Byram, since he's still not going to be on the power play, even though he would be on number one pair with Rasmus Dahlin, maybe that's not enough for him. I don't know. But I would have zero problem with re-signing him and just saying, just like I think they need to find a partner for Owen Power, and if Ekblad, you know, does wind up not coming to a deal with Florida, I think he would be perfect. And I think Byron would be a perfect partner for Dahlin. Dahlin doesn't mind playing the right side. You don't need a lefty-righty when it comes to the two of them. So, that would be something I think I'd be fine with. It's like, all right, you just signed in to be Dahlin's partner, and I had zero problem with that at all. The question is, does Bo Byram still have a problem even with that?
Paul, the Sabres have to make some decisions on how they want to approach their restricted free agents. We just talked a little bit about, obviously, J.J. Paterka's situation. We know what that is. You also have Jack Quinn. Never really recovered quite fully from the Achilles injury. Maybe started to see a little bit more of an uptick last year. Obviously came back from the Achilles injury the year before. Ryan McLeod, they get him in a trade. That seemed to have worked out so far for the Buffalo Sabres. Anything on either of these guys and how you think things play out here?
I would be careful with Ryan McLeod. I definitely would like to see him sign a long-term deal, but the Sabres have been down this road before. You know, you're rewarding guys who've had 1 year, one, you know, improved year. McLeod played well with Edmonton, but he had career highs in everything, goals, assists, points last year by far. But it's only been 1 year. So what do you do? They really made mistakes signing a lot of these young guys to 7-8 year deals, and now they're regretting it, you know. And I'd wondered if Dylan Cousins' deal would be one they could move. It was. They were able to move it. Now, I don't think they're regretting Tage Thompson's contract. I don't think they're regretting Rasmus Dahlin's contract, but there was others that they did it too early, Samuelson and Cousins. And so, well, what do you do with McLeod? Do you sign him maybe to a 2 or 3 year deal and see if last year was indeed real, which I would say, if you made me guess, I would think it was. But they've been burned before by this. And did you notice when all these guys could have been negotiated with last July 1st, none of them were. They stopped doing that because they had been burned by it and maybe had learned their lesson. So that's an interesting thought process when he's only had the one fantastic year like that. What do you do with him? Do you bridge him and give him a 2-3 year deal to see if it's really real? And in Jack Quinn's case, to me, it's very simple. You give him his qualifying offer and say, Jack, take it or leave it. This is it. We need to see more from you. You want to sign your qualifying offer, fine. If you want to hold out, that's your business, but this is all you're getting. That's how I would handle that one. That definitely has to be a show-me type of a contract.
And then finally, of course, in goal. I mean, we've talked about how to handle the goalie situation, but there's also the money part of it with Devon Levi. He's also a restricted free agent. How do you think this team goes about that? And part of this might be, Paul, what they envision and where they envision him to be next year. I mean, you're not going to pay a guy a certain number if he's going to be in Rochester still, but at the same time, you need to thread that needle.
Well, it becomes a two-way contract, and what that means is you get paid a certain amount to be in Rochester, and you get paid another amount to be in Buffalo. Unless you do sign a one-year deal, then you get paid your NHL salary while you're in Rochester. So, he still does not have to be on waivers to go down to Rochester. I know Kevin Adams said on Locker Cleanout Day that he's perfectly comfortable if they earn the job in training camp of coming into the season with two young players like that. I would not be comfortable at all going into the season with two young goaltenders like that. I mean, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has done it, not this past year, but the year before. For 35 games after January 1st, he was at the top of the league in many of his numbers. He was great, made the big save when it needed to be made. he didn't do enough of that last year. Did it sometimes, but not enough of it. He degressed. So what have he got there? And Levi, you've handed him the job twice now, and he hasn't been able to do it. He hadn't earned it. He had it handed to him. He had a really good season in Rochester. He was an all-star. Started the playoffs lights out. You know, gave up two goals, the first two goals of the series against Syracuse, and didn't give up another goal in the three games with two consecutive shutouts. But then he played the best regular season team in the league, and his numbers were horrible. I mean, he had the one good game to keep the series alive in game four, but in the three losses, he just was not good at all. Neither was his team. They didn't play well in front of him. But he wasn't all that good, and that, to me, was a red flag. It's like, okay, overall, he had a good season in Rochester, but where is he right now? You know, can you count on him to step into the NHL? That last series gave me some doubts. So I would not at all, if I were the general manager of the Sabres, be comfortable with going into the season with those two. It could work out. They both could be fantastic. And it also could go down the drain. And if it goes down the drain, the drought now reaches 15. Because if you don't have goaltending, you are not going to win.
Paul, a couple of big picture items before I let you go here. Just a couple minutes left, and I appreciate your time. I know you got to run. Olympic teams starting to be announced, at least the first six. Any surprises? I guess J.J. Paterka not being among the first six in Germany was a bit of a surprise to some people. And then on the heels of this, do you expect Tage Thompson to be a part of Team USA eventually?
I do, and the Paterka thing probably was the only thing that surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the best. He's not better than Dreisaitl, but to me, he's one of the top six from Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And has always done pretty well when he's played for Team Germany. And I had read somewhere, well, it's because they don't know his contract situation. The Olympics are in February.
Yeah, who cares?
J.J. Paterka will have a contract by February.
With somebody.
Whether it's here, whether it's somewhere else.
Yeah.
But J.J., so I'm not buying that. I don't get that. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. If that's Germany's thought is, well, we have to wait to see what his contract situation is. I can tell you what his contract situation is. He will have one by February. He's not going to be sitting out, either he'll be traded or have a contract or even sign his qualifying offer if he has to, just to get a one-year deal and then do it again the next year. But he will have a contract by then. So, yeah, that was the one that did surprise me. Is other than that, though, it was pretty straightforward for the other teams.
And then finally, Paul, I just saw the NHL, the Stanley Cup Twitter account, like the Stanley Cup little Twitter account, tweeted out, "I'll be in the building tonight." All right, do the Panthers hoist it tonight?
I hope not, because I'd like to see more hockey.
Yeah, I know, me too, buddy.
These two teams have been playing.
Sorry, I know you don't like making predictions, I guess. I guess the overall sentiment, though, just about how this series is going, I guess I'd ask you.
Yeah, I don't care who wins. I just want to see seven games.
Yeah.
So in that case, I guess I hope Edmonton wins this particular game to keep this series going, which would be fantastic. So, you know, Ford is playing awfully well, but the way Edmonton goes, I never count them out. The last couple of games, they haven't got goaltending, but I know both those goaltenders are perfectly capable of standing on their head and have done it throughout these playoffs many times, and even last year's playoffs in Skinner's case. He had problems last year, then all of a sudden took off, and they took them to the Stanley Cup Finals. So I never count this group out with Dreisaitl and McDavid, capable goaltending when they're on. So, you would think Florida at home could close it out, but, hey, I don't count this Edmonton Oilers team out at all.
Paul, enjoy the rest of your day, the rest of your week. We'll catch up soon. Thanks a lot, my man.
Yeah, good talking to you. Take care.
You too. That is Paul Hamilton. All right, we'll take a timeout. When we come back, it's WGR day. I say that because, you're listening to WGR, but it's also because I got Brian Colzio coming up. Brian's going to talk a little bit about what we saw in the U.S. Open over the weekend. Fantastic punt to win it by J.J. Spahn. And a little bit on the Sabres stuff from Brian as well. And some things coming up that you'll want to know about as far as golf is concerned here in the area. We'll get with Brian Colzio after this timeout in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Thank you.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I just called it WGR Day here on WGR. That's because you just heard from Paul, and now you're going to hear from Brian Koziel and the Western Hotline. U.S. Open over the weekend, Father's Day. It was great kind of settling back and watching the last, you know, six, 7 holes after the rain delay. And then all of a sudden, J.J. Spawn with that incredible, what, 64-foot putt, Brian? That was unbelievable, wasn't it?
It really was. I mean, good morning, by the way. It was awesome that he's able to have that moment. There's not a lot of like, hey, you hit a putt to win. Now, officially, I know he didn't need that putt to win, but it obviously is the winning putt. So it's pretty wild. I mean, he's a guy that has struggled throughout his career to kind of keep it going, and he's had his best year ever. He lost in a playoff to Rory McIlroy at the Players Championship. That's kind of where he really, you know, I guess got known this year. And then obviously on the stage this time, I mean, overcoming, to me, I think a great lesson for all of us in any sport that you play. Like, he had a terrible start. He had a ton of bad breaks, shoots a 40 on the front nine, which for the most part, like, that would do you in. And he talked about how the rain delay kind of, you know, gave him a reset. He even changed clothes. He mentioned what would Tiger do here? Well, he would grind it out. He wouldn't just throw it in and say, well, it's not my day kind of thing. And boy, what a recovery. He played outstanding. He was definitely the best player after the rain delay and after the restart, and a pretty thrilling finish. That is an epic career highlight moment right there in the rain, yeah. The long putt, the caddy jumps in the air with the umbrella. He throws his putter up in the air. The crowd's going bananas on the final hole at a historic venue in a major. Like, that's, you know, for him, that's the highlight of his career right there.
Brian, I mean, his highest career finish in a major was 23rd overall at the 2022 Masters. What do we know about J.J. Spawn, and how did this happen?
So this year he's gotten, I would say, up to this point where maybe it's not as surprising as I know. You look statistically at what his career had been, and you'd say this is a major shock. But he had a really good season. As I said, he finished second at the Players Championship. That's a really, really tough event. That's as tough as any non-major if there is. And he had been playing well this year. He's had some top 10 finishes. He had gotten his world ranking up to 25 in the world. So if you said, hey, you know, the U.S. Open winner is ranked 25th in the world, that wouldn't sound that surprising. And that's kind of what he's done this year. He's just been very consistent. He's an excellent putter. He said that he has really changed his mentality. He thought maybe golf was, you know, he thought a few years ago, he's like, well, maybe this is what my golf career was meant to be. I've had a good career. He had one career win. Like, okay, you know, maybe this is kind of it for me. And then he had taken a new approach about, like, handling pressure better and handling these scenarios better and not really kind of having these huge swings in emotion. I think you saw that on display, Sal, during the round. Anytime you see Spawn, he seems very kind of even-keeled. And, you know, look at, I'm going to keep doing the best I can, and if it works out in the end, then great. And obviously that mentality, I thought, was really, really impressive. I mean, the U.S. Open can stress out a golfer more than any other tournament itself. I mean, and Oakmont is probably the hardest test of all of them to begin with. So you're already going into a stressful situation with a ton of pressure, and I thought he just handled it beautifully. I mean, a lot of us could probably say, oh, he had a couple of bad breaks, a couple of bad bounces, then he hits the pin on a great shot, and it spins all the way off the green and all the way down the hill, and you're thinking, like, man, how much worse of luck could you get? And he didn't pack it in. He came back with a nice reset and played outstanding on the back nine. To shoot a 40 and then a 32, I mean, you have to be, I think, pretty strong-willed to do that. I think that's a great lesson for all of us. Like, not only if you're just playing in your casual round with your buddies, like if you get off to a bad start, like, hey, there's a lot of golf to go. You can still make it a great day in terms of your score. Or if you're just playing any sport, you get down, you get behind. Like, what a great lesson from us to see from Spawn that, hey, if you stick with it and you keep a great attitude throughout, like, good things can happen.
When you look at the leaderboard on Saturday and into Sunday, it almost, if you look at the names, now I know you are very dialed into golf, but to the average golf viewer, it kind of felt like a random tournament, you know, in June, that it's not a major with the names. And that's no disrespect, right? Spawn, McIntyre, Hovland, Cam Young, Hatton, Ortiz. You didn't see Scheffler or Rahm until later. You didn't see Rory McIlroy. Is that good for golf or not good for golf?
I think for the most part, it's good for golf, I'll argue, because now you're getting another set of names, Sal, that the next time you watch golf this week, you'll know Spawn and you'll know his story, and you know McIntyre and you'll know his story, and you'll know Sam Burns and you know his story. And this is how we get to know the next set of stars. Now, I'm not going to say superstars. That would be what you said with Scheffler and with Rahm and with McIlroy. They have raised their game over time to get the superstar status in the sport. But I think you have this next tier of players that all are obviously outstanding players in their own right. They wouldn't be on the professional tour if they weren't. But you start to learn about Spawn, you start to learn about Sam Burns, you start to learn about Robert McIntyre, and you find qualities that maybe you find likable about them. Robert McIntyre earned a ton of fans by not even hitting a golf shot. Obviously, he played well, but he's sitting there in the clubhouse and the TV coverage pans to him showing his reaction to Spawn's putt and how he clapped and kind of said, like, wow, like, you know, what a way there kind of to win. And it was at his expense. I mean, if that putt doesn't go in at the speed that it's at, maybe it goes 5 or 6 feet by. If Spawn doesn't get that comebacker, McIntyre's in a playoff and maybe he's the U.S. Open champion we're talking about here on a Tuesday. So, for him to react with such class and mostly in awe of the great putt that Spawn hit, even though it was at his expense in terms of losing because of it, I thought McIntyre really likable. And McIntyre, of course, won the Canadian Open last year, the Scottish Open, so he's kind of starting to make a name for himself. Hovland is still a top 10 player. I thought maybe this is going to be his time. Clearly, he's talented enough to do so. Adam Scott, if you're older like you and I, we all know about Adam Scott winning the Masters. And, you know, he's kind of at the tail end of his career. He would have been the second oldest to ever win a U.S. Open. Hal Irwin in 1990 would have been, is the oldest at age 46. Adam Scott at age 44, that would have been a really, really maybe nice bookend to what is a pretty outstanding career in its own right. But, yeah, there were a lot of different storylines there. Scheffler himself, world number one, Sal, definitely had the opportunities. I mean, God, every hole you'd go to that they would go to him, he's sitting here like, oh, he's got a makeable birdie putt chance here, and it was just he couldn't make one. And that plus four number for a while that looked in play had Rahm in it too and had some other maybe bigger names. That the back nine, it was so crazy. There were so many times where I thought, this guy's still in it. This guy's still got a chance. Holy cow, Scheffler still could be the guy that comes out on top here. And we haven't even talked about the guy that had the lead for the most of the day, and that was Sam Burns. He obviously putted as good as anybody through 3.5 rounds. The hot putter went away down the stretch. I thought he got a bad break on not getting relief when he had that ball stuck in the water. He took a double bogey, and then him and Adam Scott are battling through the rain. There's the rain element through this whole thing, too. Like, so many different branches to how it played out. But, you know, memorable tournament for sure with how many different outcomes were possible at the end.
Brian Colzio on the Western Hotline. All right, Brian, the postmortem on Oakmont, was it as bad, as tough? I mean, it was certainly challenging. I mean, you can look at the scores, but just kind of all the talk that went into it, did it live up to, oh my God, this was just ridiculous?
I thought it was probably the right balance of them wanting to, the USGA would love the winning score to be even. Well, it essentially was. He was minus one. You know, I mean, so they got what they wanted. I thought it was very tough. I really did. The rough, if you hit it in the rough, you lost strokes because of it, unless you hit an incredible shot, which ultimately, again, if you hit an incredible recovery shot, then you should be rewarded for that. Here's what I did like, Sal. There was fluctuation in the leaderboard, and there were birdie opportunities to get yourself back in it. Sometimes at a U.S. Open, we get it where there aren't holes or there aren't chances to, like, come back. It's always about people falling back. I thought this had the appropriate mix of it being extremely challenging, super fast greens, super long rough, all that sort of stuff involved that the U.S. Open is all about, that people love to see. They love to see the carnage. They want to see the pros really, really struggle. They don't want to see maybe the winner being minus 22. I get that. I think it had all that. But at the same time, look at how Spahn finishes. He finishes birdie, birdie. The 17th hole was a drivable hole. He drove it. He hit one of the best drives of his life right there. So there were opportunities to score. And I think that's why everybody loves the Masters so much, because on the back nine on Sunday, those holes that are set up on the back nine are set up for there to be eagle opportunities, but also risk-reward. You could end up in the water and take a double bogey. And I thought, you know, for the U.S. Open, that always doesn't play out that way. And at Oakmont, I was like, oof, are we just going to see guys just falling and it's going to be survival of the fittest? There was some of that, but there were also guys that came up, like McIntyre and like Spahn. Just because they were at plus four and plus five didn't mean they couldn't get themselves back to plus one or ultimately minus one. So I thought it was the appropriate mix for what people like to see in a U.S. Open, for what the USGA likes to set it up. I have very little complaints with how that tournament played out in terms of the course and, you know, how the setup went.
Next up, Shinnecock Hills next year for the U.S. Open, Long Island.
That's right. Yeah, out in Southampton, way out on the edge of Long Island. It's been hosting tournaments forever. And the last time it was there for a major, it was there for a PGA championship. Brooks Koepka won. The last time it was there for a U.S. Open, Retief Goosen beat Phil Mickelson. That was in 2004. That was a place where I was actually there in 2004. They were spraying greens in between groups with a hose because the greens had gotten out of hand. It was super hot. And way out on Long Island, like there's always wind because you've got the ocean basically right on top of the course. And if it's windy and the greens are fast, you could have balls just blowing off of it. So I'm sure the USGA learned their lesson from that we won't get that again. But yeah, that's where it'll be next time. Another one of those really, really hard courses that have had a long tradition of hosting majors.
And then the next major this year will be at Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland, the British Open, the Open Championship. What do we know about this course?
So it was in the rotation for the Open, years and years, decades ago. And then it kind of went away. They did a restoration of the course, and now it's kind of back in. They want to get Ireland involved. Scotland hosts Open Championship. England hosts it, but they didn't have anything in Ireland regularly. So they renovated Royal Portrush. It was there, I believe, 2019. And that was Shane Lowry's win, where he won a major. Coming back to Ireland, to me, an interesting storyline is going to be how does McIlroy handle this? Because he, post-Masters, to me, Sal, has not handled it well. He's had arguments with blaming media. Hmm. He's upset that his name got out in public about the driver specs, that it didn't conform, even though Scottie Scheffler's name was too. I'm sure he's annoyed at the media that McIlroy's name was in the stories about the driver not conforming and Scheffler's wasn't, even though they both essentially had their drivers pulled. I don't know why he should be. I can understand maybe why he's taking aim at the media, but the media doesn't do the specs. The USGA officials would do the specs. So somebody from the USGA leaked that to the media. He's saying, oh, the media leaked my name. Well, they're not the writer from golf.com is not checking out and weighing your driver and checking out the grooves on your driver to see whether or not they conform to the rules or not. And by the way, I just want to make clear, like, his driver not conforming, Sal, doesn't mean he cheated at the Masters or had an illegal driver. All it means is that maybe over time, the grooves have worn off to the point where the face doesn't conform. Or if you have a club that you've hit it so many times, like, maybe it's worn off enough to the point where it doesn't meet a certain specification or a certain weight or, something like that. It doesn't mean that he was cheating or that it was illegal. It just, hey, at some point over time, because these pros hit, 500 golf balls a day sometimes, it doesn't, meet the specs. It just wears out because it's a piece of equipment. So it doesn't mean, but I think people associated that with cheating. I think Rory didn't like that. he clearly hasn't played well post-Masters. It's so weird. I had it all wrong. Like, I thought after the Masters, I'm like, you just accomplished. He said, I've accomplished everything I've wanted to in golf. He's won all the majors. He's been a Ryder Cup hero. He's won the Grand Slam. I thought he would play freely, free swinging. Hey, if I miss a cut, no big deal. How can I be in a bad mood? I've accomplished everything I want to in the sport. Like, when you say something like that, you think, like, you know, nothing could put you in a bad mood. When instead it's been the other way. He's been very aggravated with the media. He's pissy with fans. He, to me, doing things that he shouldn't do, smashing tee signs, throwing clubs. He knows the influence he has in the game. He was the voice of the PGA Tour through the whole Live versus PGA Tour thing that has been going on for years. He's got global presence, and he's got global influence on kids, and people obviously would call him their golf hero. For him to do some of the stuff that he's been either saying or doing, of like, well, I didn't even care if I made the cut. Like, something's not right with him. He quoted saying, like, you know, oh, more people die going down Mount Everest than going up. Well, going up, you have that goal. You're reaching for it. You're fighting through adversity. Going down, it's like you did it already. How do you handle going down? Well, he hasn't been handling it going down at all. I think he needs a break. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see him play until the Open Championship. But it's in Ireland, in his home country. They should be celebrating his outstanding accomplishment. I hope he comes in with a better frame of mind, because he has done a lot of good for the game. He has been the voice of the PGA Tour for a long time. I know you want to take a step back from that. And I do think overall, like, he has made golf better in so many ways. I think he's had a bad couple of weeks. I'm willing to maybe say, like, hey, you know, handling his success, maybe not everybody would handle it perfectly. And I don't think he has. And I'm hoping that maybe a little break and a little refocus and coming back in kind of a different mindset, we'll see maybe the Rory McIlroy that is so likable here that we've seen for the majority of his career.
Hey, I only got like a minute left here with you, but I wanted to ask you, speaking of rules, about the Sam Burns situation, the water. What did you think about the ruling?
I thought he should have gotten relief.
Mm-hmm.
Just based upon what has happened at normal PGA Tour events, I've seen less water give a player a drop. Ultimately, he got an opinion. He asked for a second opinion. They stuck together with not giving him relief. I thought he should have. I know there's video on social media that Kyle Porter, who works for CBS, he showed him like stepping in the area where Sam Burns hit and showed a ton of water coming up. Even Burns with his club, every time he took the practice swing, there was a ton of water up. To me, because Burns is in the lead there, like, I don't know, I would have given him relief. It just seemed as though, like, we've seen it. I know people have said, like, well, officially, if your stance isn't essentially causing water to come up, then it doesn't deem to be in need of relief or in worthy of relief. There was just so much water there. It was, the ball was in a lower spot than his feet was. I thought he should have gotten it. Especially Burns being in the lead. Like, do you want that to be the reason maybe that Burns doesn't win? Burns double bogeys that hole and didn't handle the rest of the hole as well. As much as I was complimenting Spahn earlier for handling the whole day and coming back, Burns did not recover well from that. You wonder if they give him relief, Sal, and he hits the next shot onto the green and pars, are we talking about Sam Burns maybe going on to win? I would be curious to see how it could have played out differently. Now, maybe he still plays poorly down the stretch and, you know, we're having the same result. But I'm sure for Sam Burns, he's definitely probably sitting here thinking, man, if I would have gotten relief there and hit it, you know, gotten a different result on that approach shot, and I don't double bogey that hole, he's probably sitting there thinking, maybe I'm the U.S. Open champion today.
I know we're a few weeks away, but Porter Cup's coming up, and then Duster Challenge, right? You want to get the word out about that?
For sure, yep. Porter Cup up at Niagara Falls Country Club is the third week in July, and it is a great amateur tournament. So it's free, open to the public. I know you and I will talk maybe, you know, in another week or two about more of details about what the field's going to look like.
Yep.
Some of the best amateurs. But that's up at Niagara Falls Country Club in Lewiston. We'll be doing some Tee to Greens up there to preview that on Saturdays. And then our Tee to Green charity Duster Putting Challenge is Friday night, July 18th at Glen Oak. It's open to the public. It's a $49 donation, and all proceeds go to PGA Hope to help veterans get golf experience, help with their mental health, put them back in kind of golfing experiences so they can kind of be with other veterans that have had trouble adjusting back to normal life. So Peter Gourmet is providing the food that night. We're so thankful for that. So $49 donation, you get into the putting tournament, you get the free dinner from Peter Gourmet, you get drinks courtesy of our friends at Michelob Ultra, all these sort of great things. Easiest way to sign up, go to the top of our Twitter page at T2G Buffalo. It's the pinned tweet. It's on the link right there. You can click on it. We'd love to have as many putters out as possible. We had over 100 putters last year come out. Super fun night. Anybody can do it. You don't even have to be a quote-unquote golfer to do it. Just come fun. Put on the 18-hole putting course that we have. Have dinner, have drinks. We turn on the lights. We play music. It's a ton of fun. I know you and Max have done it. So hopefully everybody can do it again. Friday night, July 18th, our Duster Putter Challenge that Tee to Green runs.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot for doing this today. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll catch up soon. Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Sal. Talk soon.
All right, you got it. We'll take a timeout here. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the hour and then get to the 11 o'clock hour with questions for the, and answers, I should say, from you on Alex Tuck and J.J. Paterka.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Heard the question this morning from Jeremy and Joe. If the Florida Panthers win tonight, are they a dynasty? The answer is no, they are not. No, you need like three titles in a row to be a dynasty. It's a dynasty. It's not a back-to-back repeat. That's a repeat. It's not a dynasty. I know they've gone to... It doesn't matter how many you go to if you lose. The dynasty is the winning part.
Okay, well, what about, like, let's think about the Bandits in this situation. The Bandits went to five straight.
They're a dynasty now because they're three in a row.
If they
didn't, they won three in a row. That's a dynasty.
So if they didn't win this year, they wouldn't be a dynasty.
I don't think so. I would not count them that.
I think the Panthers are.
I don't. I think you got to win three in a row to be a dynasty. Now, I would massage it a little bit by saying, if you go to five like the Bandits, I would give some room here for, in some way, shape, or form, they won three of the five.
Right, like three out of the five.
Like
the
two,
first and the
you go to two and you win, then you don't win two, then you win one, right? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's a dynasty. Absolutely. They've been dominating, and sometimes they won, sometimes they didn't. I don't know. Do you think the Miami Heat were a dynasty with LeBron James?
That one was too quick. I feel like
why? What do you mean?
It was just, I don't know. I feel like it was just like 3 years.
What have the Panthers been?
Okay, yeah, you just proved my point there. That's a good point.
They lost. They literally the exact same trajectory. The Heat went to four straight. They lost. They won two and they lost. You don't count them as a dynasty.
Yeah, that's well. Okay. It depends, I guess, also, too. Like, let's say they win tonight and they win the cup, and then they go next year. What's next year mean?
Right? I think you got to win three in a row to be a dynasty. Sorry.
Okay. All right.
I mean, if you want to talk about getting to, like, five or something in a row, that's, man, holy cow, right?
Right. Like, you're
even
always
four
there.
In a row. I don't know. I mean, I think you got to win three. I'm saying no dynasty. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Thanks for joining us here today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.